Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's show, Right of First Refusal, Part 1. Here we go. We regularly get requests from managers wanting to know how they can either be a good executive. Okay, that's a 30-second conversation.
Right, yeah.
Or even more, increasing their chances of becoming one, right?
Yeah, the manager, right. Yeah. It says managers. We think of executives as managers too. Executives say, how can I be a better executive? And managers say, how can I get to be an executive? Yeah.
Yeah, they're thinking of a title versus what they do, right?
And yeah, exactly.
And good managers act as and engage in behaviors as executives. But the problem I have with that is I get the sense that they think there's something different or hidden, right? That makes for an effective executive. There's just an error of their questions and assumptions that there's a mystique, right? There's this mystique around becoming or being an executive. And it's not true.
Yeah. Yeah. We can understand it, right? But it's not true. Look, being an executive, if you are in fact an executive, not just if you have VP in your title, is a harder job than most people realize, and almost nobody we talk to who says they want it understands how demanding being a very senior executive is at a large multinational corporation where it gets really hard. You know, if it were easy, they wouldn't be paying people $500,000 to do it. I don't know very many senior executives who don't think they earn it. It's not a job for the faint of heart. Yeah, but the issue is in terms of them being effective, the fact is, as you alluded to, right, you don't change all of a sudden. There are all kinds of things managers can do now as managers that'll prepare them to be effective when they get an executive title. And look, it's probably frustrating for people to hear, but many of the activities or strategies or tactics, most of them, in fact, are available to anybody and are just basic blocking and tackling around effectiveness and efficiency in general.
They're not sexy. And we often said that, you know, management isn't sexy, right? And these basic building blocks are boring. You don't hear executives going around talking about this stuff because there's nothing exciting about it. But they all know to do it, particularly effective ones.
Right. Yeah. Look, when it comes to being effective, when you're an executive, the first lever you've got is time. And the average manager is terrible around what they call time management, what you and I call priority management. And maybe in a sense, that's the mystique, is they can't, these managers are wondering how they can be an effective executive. And they literally don't see this gaping hole, which if you fill that hole and get it right, managing your priorities, managing your time, things get way, way easier. But the fact is, really good executives are really good at this.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that executives really handle time well is something called the right of first refusal. And it's available to anybody. In fact, this could easily be a career tools cast as well.
Sure, good. So what are we going to talk about relative to the right of first refusal? I imagine we're going to define what it is.
Yeah, our first bullet is defining the right of first refusal, which basically says, folks, if you're already scheduled with something, you can say no to a request for that time if you have on your calendar or something else, okay? Now, we're going to go over to the high level in the first point, and then we'll talk about how to do it in detail. The point two is it starts with taking control of your calendar. You got to schedule your priorities. You can't overschedule, and you got to make sure that if it's on your calendar, you're actually doing it. This is not a Potemkin village. Our point three, the second thing you do is you say no because you have something on your calendar. But I think this is where some people like it. This is my favorite part of the cast, the third part, and then you say no because we'll tell you how to say no. There's a right way. It matters. And probably for 90% of people who are listening, you're saying no the wrong way now. And look, the fourth point is you can be trumped by your boss or by somebody else with relative power over you. And you should be trumped when you first say no. It's not the right of refusal of everything ad infinitum. It's the right of first right of refusal. And that matters.
Right. Hey, look, and the fact that people can say no, right, that you can be told no, doesn't mean you don't say no in the first place, right? A lot of managers start the people just trump me, so I might as well not even say no. Well, no.
Yeah, that's a big, you're absolutely right. That's a big problem. All we're doing in saying no is making obvious not pointing out and saying, ha, 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 it's in my favor. We're simply making obvious that there's conflict, that there's no, not conflict, probably the wrong word, that there is friction in the organization. Two different people, by definition, have two different responsibilities and two different needs and two different desired outcomes. And it's okay for you to step up and admit, I have a different set of priorities than you do. It doesn't make the other person wrong or right. Different isn't bad or good. It starts out just being different. Yeah, now look, an A grade versus a C grade. An A is good and a C is not, or an A is good and a D or an F is not. But they start out just being different. Diversity, having two people with different priorities, is totally normal. And pointing out that you have different priorities than somebody else is not a problem. And you'll discover that people really won't mind all that much if you handle it the right way, which is what we're going to talk about.
Good. Okay. So let's talk about what the right of first refusal is, because, you know, we're going to say you can say no to time requests, but there's some conditions, right? You just can't go around starting tomorrow and start saying no to everybody. That doesn't work. So when can we say no?
If you say no and you do a happy dance and then poke your finger in their eye, then yes, technically you're violating the rules.
It's fun. I mean, there's a sense of power.
For a little bit.
It doesn't work.
For a little bit. The manager tool's right of first refusal as it comes to calendaring says something really simple and really powerful. If your priorities are already on your calendar, you can reasonably refuse a request for your time, at least initially. Now, when we work with managers and executives, try to help managers become more effective. In my head, I'm not trying to help them become an executive. I'm just trying to help them become effective. And if you're a really highly effective manager, you're going to end up being an executive probably someday, if in fact you have a desire for that. There are really three moving parts to this particular guidance, the right of first refusal. Okay. The first one is scheduling your priorities. And we're going to go through these in more detail. We just want you to understand it at a high level before we talk through the actual details, okay? Look, the first thing you got to do is you got to be willing to schedule your priorities. Here's what Mike and I see on 90% of the calendars we look at. Meetings. We've said it before. We'll say it again. Your calendar is not there simply to capture places you're supposed to be with other people. The moment we see a calendar full of meetings, we don't actually see fullness. We see a misuse of the calendar. Your calendar is where you create an advance record of your use of your most limited resource, time, to achieve your professional responsibilities. Your calendar is your priority completion planning document. It's a form of a project plan, okay? The project being all of your responsibilities. Okay. And there are a lot of details inherent in each one of those things. If all we see are meetings, and we're not even going to get into the whole issue of how many people hate meetings and how much you actually talk in meetings, how many decisions are not made in meetings, or if decisions are made, they're not clear, or if deliverables are required, they're not captured. Forget all that. Forget about the awfulness of the majority of meetings that we see or hear about. Forget about that. Let's assume meetings are incredibly efficient. It won't matter if all you have on your calendar is meetings. You are doing your calendar wrong. Now, we're not saying calendar shouldn't be on your meeting, or a meeting shouldn't be on your calendar. Sorry about that.
But not just
they
the
should.
Only thing.
And in fact, they're secondary after doing the things you need to do to in order to accomplish your priorities. In some cases, that means a meeting, but in a lot of cases, it does not.
Right. And the only reason you would, well, okay, not the only reason, but the primary reason you would attend a meeting is it supports your priorities, right? If the meeting doesn't support your priorities, maybe you shouldn't be going.
Exactly. What you do when your calendar is only for meetings, folks, this is a huge problem. I mean, the moment you have it nothing but meetings, then you've lost the fundamental principle of your calendar. But what you do when your calendar is only for meetings, you lose control. Okay. And even worse, in our estimation, you also lose all kinds of reminders about what's important. Too many managers, Mike and I see, just get gradually weaned away from lasering in on what they have to deliver, and you can be pulled in 100 different directions. And people say to us all the time, well, I feel pulled in 100 different directions. Say no. Oh, well, I can't. Oh, okay, well, then don't complain about it. You know, if in fact you can't, right? I can't jump to the moon, so I'm not going to try. If you can't, then okay, fine. Well, I really want to. Well, but then don't tell me, you know, okay, fine. Do you want to hear a way? No, I don't think I can. Okay, let's save me some time and you some time too. Look, and everybody has this happen to them. If you're listening right now, I promise this has happened to you. You've come into work with only one or two things to do. Maybe you're having a busy day. Maybe you're having a light day, but it's Monday and you thought about it Sunday night, or Friday you left work and said, I didn't get those things done last week. They got to be done by Tuesday morning. I'm going to get them done Monday. And anytime somebody tells me, by the way, that something's going to be done the next morning, I assume it's going to be done between 5 and 8 o'clock after all the rest of the quote work is done the rest of the day. But if you come to work with only one or two things to do and you have a commitment to do them, and at the end of the day, you realized you had not done them, you're experiencing why your calendar. And by the way, folks, we don't mean to point fingers. It's true for us too often. It proves why your calendar is, why you're not thinking clearly about what your priorities are. If you can be pulled in 100 different directions and you don't have techniques to get back onto the linear track toward your responsibilities, not saying your responsibility is only one thing and you don't feel good about focusing on it. We know you have 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 things you got to do. But if you have 10 things to do, it's probably too many. And saying yes to things that aren't in that 10 just makes it even more impossible than it already is. But I got to tell you something, that story about somebody coming in and wanting to get two things done and not getting either one of them done, that never happens to highly effective executives. Just doesn't. Why? Because they know they have to get those two things done. They know that there are hundreds of people relying on them to get it done. They know that when they were a manager or an individual contributor, they hated executives who sat on decisions, who sat on ideas, who sat on work and delayed everybody. And the executive could always say, well, I'm busy doing other things. They hated it. And so they learned that I'm going to get things done that I have to get done. And they say no to other things. And yeah, there's too much to do, but they're definitely going to get the key things done they're supposed to get done. They're going to deliver on their key priorities. So just to be clear, sometimes your priorities are meetings, but they schedule their key priorities, period. And well, I'm always about to go on and say, and they keep to their priorities, but that's point three. The second thing that you've got to be able to do once you get your priorities scheduled is you've got to say no. You've got to be willing to say no professionally.
Right. Yeah. There's a way to do it, right? You just don't say.
Yeah. No. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No. In fact, the word of no, the latest word, it didn't used to be this, but it's swamped. I'm swamped. I'm just swamped. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm swamped and you're not. Therefore, my time is more valuable than yours.
There's a bit of arrogance. There's a bit of arrogance there, but you know, there's a bit of self-marketing there, I think.
Yes.
But yeah, swamped isn't. Yeah. That's not the way to do it. Too many managers say yes, though, and they allow their calendar to do it for them. When it comes to saying no professionally, there are actually two parts of this, folks. I'm going to say something that some of you are going to scoff at and say, oh, I knew that. I can't imagine he thinks that's an aha moment. But trust me, there are plenty of people who are listening, maybe as many as 40% of the people who are listening right now are not scoffing, and they're totally having an aha moment. Okay. There are two parts to saying no professionally. The first part is, folks, if your time is scheduled, electronically shared calendars say no for you when others are trying to get your time. This is a huge value to someone who is professionally managing their priorities. And we'll talk later about, you just can't fill up your calendar just as a defense mechanism. We're not suggesting that you're being lazy. You know, if you're just being lazy and using a political defense mechanism, then that obviously that's not ethical. But if you have your priorities on your calendar, people request time with you and they can't get what they want because your calendar is telling them no. And by the way, we're not recommending you be 100% scheduled. Far from it. We'll talk about what it means to be efficiently scheduled here in a little bit. So that's the first part. And I've seen enough calendars to know people have wide swaths of time. And even better, they have wide swaths of time this week. Maybe tomorrow their calendar is full, but 5, 7, 10, 15, 20 days from now, nothing on the calendar. And by the way, when I look at executives, I say, let me see your calendar a month from now. When there's nothing on the calendar, I'm like, you're not actually managing your calendar. You're just saying yes or no to various requests for meetings, which, by the way, are terribly inefficient. If you were managing your priorities and your priorities are going to exist 3 months from now and you've got deliverables 2, 4, 6, and 8 months from now, you would have things on your calendar 3 months from now. But almost no one does, except the highly effective executives. The second part of saying no professionally is being willing to say no professionally, politely, or to request a different time when somebody asks whether you have time to do something, to be somewhere, and so on. So there's two parts. The first part is if you get scheduled, you get less requests, or the requests are attempted to be fitted into your open time to begin with, which then means your priorities don't get messed with.
Right.
And the second part is sometimes, even then, you're going to have to say no. And look, folks, the right of first refusal is not a way to play games with your schedule, with your calendar.
Right. Yeah. If you want to use this as a way to become difficult to work with.
Oh, gosh.
It's not going to work. People see right through you. Now, if you're professional, you do the things we're talking about professionally, people will not only they accept it, they'll have some respect for you because you're doing what you.
Yeah, they'll both expect it, and they'll accept it, and they'll admire you for it, right? People are afraid to hurt people's feelings, but as long as you do it professionally, and we'll tell you how in just a minute, and this is Manager Tools, we'll tell you the words to say, they will actually respect you for it. Look, Manager Tools' right of first refusal as it relates to calendaring, all it does is make clear what has always been the case. It is reasonable to say no to requests for your time if you are otherwise scheduled with a key priority or other reasonably important activity. And one does not assume that a no is final, but rather usually a request for a different time. That's all. But because nobody's doing it in the modern world, because everybody complains about how busy they are, because very few people have wrestled their priorities to the ground and then made their calendar serve their priorities. When you do this, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king or queen.
Right. And again, going back to the idea that we're not suggesting you use this as a weapon to avoid going to meetings.
Yeah, it's not.
You schedule your priorities, and then you're going to stick to your calendar.
Yeah, exactly. Too many managers don't know that they can schedule their priorities, so they don't do it, right? Or, you know, let's not be too cynical. They know they should do it, so they try to do it. We know that there are some of you out there that know, I should be doing this. There are some. I think there are minorities. I didn't know that I could do that. I thought the calendar was just to capture meetings. I think there are plenty of people who let their calendar capture meetings, knowing that they should be doing, and I use the word should loosely there, folks, knowing that they, quote, should, unquote, be doing priority scheduling, but they're not. There are some people who know that they, quote, should, unquote, and then they, quote, try, unquote. But the trying is in their head. They have a vague idea, like, think about the Q4 marketing budget, and they put 90 minutes on their calendar to think about it, which, by the way, that's not what I would want my boss to see on my calendar. Q4 marketing budget planning, Q4 marketing budget spreadsheet, Q4 marketing budget algorithms, Q4 budget strategy, okay, people will tolerate that, but not thinking about things. And look, I'm talking a little bit about calendar marketing here a little bit, but if you have down Q4 marketing budget planning, and then you sit, put your feet up and think about Q4 marketing without knowing what your tasks are, that's not effective either. When there are things like these on your calendar, no actions, no deliverables, no project mentality. And by the way, getting things done is so good on this. What's the next action? Next action is a huge one, right? The fact is we've seen too many managers who say they're actually scheduling the priorities, but in fact, they're not sticking to their calendar and delivering on the value of the hour or the 30 minutes or the hour and a half that they have on their calendar to talk about the Q4 marketing plan or budget or strategy or whatever it is. If you do that often enough, by the way, if you are seen as not really delivering, as not really creating value during these times where your, quote, priorities, unquote, are, quote, scheduled, unquote, your associates are going to learn that your calendar is a Potemkin village, right? And they're going to ignore your protestations that you're too busy. And they'll come to you last and say, well, sorry, you won't be there. Or they'll come to you first and say, this is the time I have. And they'll know, you'll see it in their eyes that they don't trust your response that, well, I'm too busy for this or that. And you will end up perhaps getting some results that you like, but you'll damage a lot of relationships.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the overview. More detail probably than most people wanted.
Right. Yeah. As always, probably.
Well, oh, man, as always. Okay. I got it. That's not feedback. Dude, as always.
Slam on you. A lot of folks want to know the 5-minute answer to being a great executive or a great manager. And unfortunately, it's a little bit harder than that. There is no 5-minute answer.
My standard joke to that at conferences now, when people say, just real quick, 30 seconds, give me a roadmap for the next 5 years of my career. I said, that reminds me of the philosophy test, you know, define the universe, be specific, give two examples. You have 5 minutes.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's take a step back. I think it makes a lot of sense. And folks want to be able to say no because they want to focus on their priorities. But folks, none of the stuff we just talked about can happen unless you take control of your calendar. And we've been banging this drum for a while, dude, but we got to talk about it.
We're never stop. And to be honest, there's yet more to come in this. I continue to have conversations with managers and executives that make me believe that we have to get down even deeper into the details. And I have to start taking more detailed notes of every single calendar and conversation I have with people and say, okay, you know, here are the 10 things I need to be sharing with more people that are obvious to me, but not obvious to everybody else. And really, I mean, we've shared a lot on calendaring and time/priority management, but there's more to be shared clearly. So I know it's a shock, people, but your priorities matter. And the single biggest limitation on achievement in human behavior in organizations is not cash, it's time. Time is your most perishable resource. Simple as that. And if you don't start controlling your calendar, which is a way of, quote, managing your time, unquote, you won't have something better or equivalent on your calendar when someone asks for your time. You can't use the right of first refusal unless you have on your calendar things that are that would legitimately justify you in saying, I know you're asking me to give a speech to a third grade class, but I'm in a meeting with the CEO. That's an egregious and stupid example, but you get the point. And what too many people are doing is they just have meetings or they have nothing else or they've got big blank spots. And frankly, there are people who defend their blank spots because nowadays they're doing email, which is just another issue, but that's my head's going to explode if I start talking about that too much. Now, look, there are all kinds of ways to wrestle your calendar into what we might call effective executive shape, right? And we've already shared some of that, but I want to touch on a couple of things. First, schedule your priorities. At its simplest, put time for the top 2, 3, 4 things you're responsible for on your calendar at regular intervals. Maybe it's not every week, though we would argue if you think it's not, you're maybe not thinking enough about what's really important. I'm not saying you have to have 2 hours of strategy every week on your calendar. Strategy is probably too big a word, unless you're a very, very senior executive. But metrics, you know, key customers, if you're a sales manager, let me give a couple examples. If you're a sales manager, you've got to have time to call on key accounts. Okay. Now, I know some of you don't know what sales managers do. They not only sell, but they also manage the sales force. They're working managers like all the rest of us. But they usually have key accounts that they call on. So there ought to be time on your calendar to call on key accounts. I remember talking to a sales manager once who looked at a week and said, God, there's no time with customers on there. And we were friends. I'd known him for years. I said, your fault. You put a key customer on there, right? You're not going to miss that. You have to drive to a customer. You schedule time with a customer to call them. You're not going to miss that. No sales manager is going to miss that, right? There's got to be time to meet with a customer. There's got to be time on your calendar to prepare to meet with them. You need time on your calendar to follow up with corporate after the meeting and to communicate status, particularly if there are deliverables that your organization owns to a customer, which are really important deliverables. You got to have time for your directs. Okay, one-on-ones do that, but even if you don't know what one-on-ones are, you need to have time to be seeing your folks. And if you say, well, I don't need to do that this month, don't be surprised if you start wondering about retention issues. You're going to need time for efforts to get a new product idea into the mix with production people or with product design, for instance. And really, this is probably a project, or you could turn it into a project. And again, there would be next actions, to quote David Allen's Getting Things Done. You need time, frankly, to do manager stuff like reviews and succession planning, even though that may not be every week. Maybe what you could do is in January, you could know when succession planning is normally done and when reviews are normally done, and you could schedule them. And, you know, you have the normal busyness that always creeps up on you. And maybe what you know is you start looking in December and you realize, my gosh, I've got so many reviews to write and so on. I better make sure I make my numbers in November with my key customers because I won't have time to do it in December. almost every sales manager in the country, assuming a not a typical, not a majority, but a significant plurality of sales managers go through that. You know, that should be a fairly standard thing that sales manager would say, I got to get done by November because December is going to be eaten alive with admin and compensation and bonuses and commissions and all those kind of discussions with senior people. So January can be the start of a new year and planning for the next year as well. Your boss is going to call you to corporate and you're going to have to spend 2 days at corporate, sometimes between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Look, if you're a development manager, you need time with your folks. Again, one-on-one's not a problem, but you know, maybe you didn't hear about it from us. You need time to prep for a code review meeting. Maybe it's not every week, although in many cases it would be. You need time to review code. God, I don't know how many people go into a code review meeting. They know they've been involved in the code. They know they can read the code and they don't review the code.
Right.
And they expect somebody else to brief them. And then they're like, well, can you explain this? Can you explain this? Can you explain this? Like,
no. And there's a wasted
that's why the code.
Right there.
Yeah. That's why the stuff is posted. You're supposed to look at it. So schedule time for it. And if you don't do it, don't bitch at other people because they didn't do it either. And then everybody hates the code review. I'm sorry. I'm going to get mail about that. You need time to review the code. You also need time to go ask questions of the developers. Maybe there's a very important code review and the key developer is you really feel like you and he or you and she need to be on the same page. Put a half hour on your calendar to sit down and talk to him or her about what's going on and what you think the issues are going to be in the review and how you can address them. I don't know why more people aren't more strategic about that and they just don't seem to do it. The ones I've sat through, you need to come up with your take on what the quality assurance plan is going to be for this module or for the next big product support effort you're going to do. You need time for budgeting. You need time for reviewing resumes and writing job descriptions if, in fact, you're going to hire somebody. And I'm not saying that you would put on your calendar 2 hours every month to review resumes, but the moment you know you're going to hire somebody, you talk to HR, you go over to HR and you say, look, if you're a first-time manager, what's the process? How long does it take? I've got an open rec and HR says, okay, here are the 5 things that need to happen. Well, okay, maybe 3 of those things take a half an hour, 45 minutes. You put them on your calendar sometime in the next 3 weeks and you make them happen. And if at the end of the month you haven't done them, it's your fault. Now, look, if you're like many managers right now, you're probably listening to this. You're probably thinking, yeah, yeah, that makes good sense, good thinking. You're probably kind of passively listening to this. But I have a question for you. Actually, I have 2 questions for you. First, how much time do you spend doing email? I say it's 2 questions because really there's kind of 2 answers. And this one is kind of a Rorschach test, a question, because folks tend to answer this in 1 of 2 ways. Some say, oh, I do email all the time.
Right. As if that's a good thing.
Yeah. And this is, by the way, folks, this is a bad sign because it means you do a lot of it and it fills up all that extra time, all those interstitial spaces during your day. Other people say to us, oh, I have no idea. This too is a bad sign because it means you do a lot of it and it fills up all your extra time, all the interstitial spaces during your day. The point of that is, if you don't schedule it, Parkinson's law, work expands to fill the time you allot to it. And if you don't allot any time, it's a zero or an infinity. And so you end up literally not wrestling email to the ground. And I know people who have 300 or 400 emails a day and they do email 3 times a day. No one has any problem with their relationship skills or their email skills. None at all. This is rampant among highly effective executives. I had a young manager recently. I want to say it was Los Angeles, Mike, but it may not have been. Somebody complained, oh, yeah, this executive doesn't do email. You know, he's kind of a dinosaur. I said, no offense, but I know of the person you're talking about in your firm. We'd had some other people from their firm come before. I know that guy does email. Yeah, well, but, you know, he's not in the loop on email. Yeah, you like outranks this manager by like 4 levels. Really? Or the CEO says, yeah, I don't do email. Well, maybe the CEO's admin is printing out his email and reading it to him. And he's saying, say this or say that. Just because you can be more efficient typing doesn't mean it's more effective for you to spend a lot of time on email.
Yeah, I don't know whether doing email is good or bad from the CEO's perspective. But the fact that the younger manager is thinking that being an executive or a good manager is equated with doing email. That's the bizarre thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So folks, look, for many of us, email is killing any chance we have of achieving this recommendation of scheduling your priorities because you feel you have no free time to schedule. but you're probably confusing free time with non-work, which only happens, frankly, to someone who is not scheduling their priorities. And frankly, nowadays with email, there is no non-work time that's unscheduled or free time because you let email eat it all up. And that's part of the reason why you're less effective all day, because you have a low-grade headache every time you're back at your desk as email keeps piling up. So the point here is put things on your calendar that you believe are important. If you need help figuring out what your priorities might should be, come to the forums. Ask other managers. You may not get the perfect answer. You know, if you're a manager in a foreign exchange office that particularly deals in rare collectibles, in international trade of rare collectibles, you may struggle to get somebody in our forums that knows, hey, here are the three or four things that I know are important for that job. But you'll get something within 60 or 70% and at least get you started so you can refine it over the course of a year. This is something, this scheduling priorities, managing your calendar, the right of first refusal, all of this stuff is something you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, professional life, 30 plus years for some of you. It doesn't matter if the first year you do it, you're only 60% of the way effective. It's fine. 60% is hugely more important. It's strategically more important than not doing it at all. I think there's a big mistake among managers that somebody else knows how to do it. I'm reminded right now, for those of you who have been listening for a long time, of the John the Gate Guard story. You know, find me the guy with the book that tells me exactly how to do this. It's not going to be that easy. You need to choose and make some choices and find out what results you get and then modify it and be willing to stick to it. And of the four or five things out of tens of thousands that we have talked about and will talk about in the future, managing your calendar, putting your priorities on your calendar and sticking to your calendar is in the top 10.
Oh, definitely.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for part one. We'll continue with part two next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.